Here's another image of... Oh, it's not able to be focused any better than this, I don't think. Let's see. See, it's the nature of the slide. Some of these images come from books, and if you photograph them, you know, if they're a very small little thing, then they're very grainy in the reproduction. And this next one is very grainy. You know, it's funny. I had some fantastic slides of this scene, and I showed them in New York, and the slides disappeared, and so I don't have them anymore. Anyway, if you're over in Istanbul sometime, and you go to the Kyrie Jame, which is an ancient chapel, you will see the most gorgeous murals in tile formation of Christ breaking through the gates of limbo with Satan underneath his feet. And you'll find it all over Europe. I mean, some of the statuary in Brittany, for example, show this theme. Oftentimes, the crypt of hell is the maw of a beast. So you'll often see the children and the patriarchs huddled in this huge maw, and Christ reaching right down the maw of the beast to pull them out. I wanted to tell you a story of Marsha Linehan. Now, I said here we have an image of penetration of the traumatic state, the unconscious encapsulation, the psychic retreat. That's what John Steiner, British author, calls it. And usually this is mediated by a person, the therapist or a helper or a guide of some kind, this vertical kairos entering the one-dimensional world of limbo. But sometimes the breakthrough comes miraculously. And here's an example. This was reported in 2011 in the New York Times. Maybe some of you saw it. An article by Benedict Carey. It's a story about American psychologist Marsha Linehan, who's the creative inspiration behind a new approach to psychotherapy with individuals with very severe mental illness, known as CBT. Dr. Linehan, now 68, told her story to an audience of friends and family and doctors at the Institute of Living in Hartford, where she had previously been hospitalized as a patient as a young girl. Her inspiration to finally reveal the dark secrets about her severe suffering was a question asked to her by one of her own patients. And the patient said, "Dr. Linehan, are you one of us?" The inquiring patient went on to say that if Dr. Linehan could honestly admit to being one of us, it would make a tremendous difference. It would give her patients hope. The story that Linehan then had the courage to tell describes how she had suffered as a young woman from severe episodes of schizophrenia, borderline personality disorder, including many attempts at suicide. She was hospitalized in 1961 at the age of 17, placed in a locked seclusion room because she attacked herself repeatedly, burning her wrists with cigarettes, slashing her arms and her legs and her midsection with any sharp object she could find. In seclusion, her wish to die only deepened, and she took to banging her head on the walls of the floor. She was in complete possession by dis, in the language of what we're looking at here. Quote, "My whole experience of these episodes was that someone else was doing it." And that's true. The defense was doing it. "I know this is coming. I'm out of control. Somebody help me. Please, please, where are you, God? I felt totally empty, like the Tin Man. I had no way to communicate what was going on, no way to understand it." Not knowing what else to do, the staff of the Institute put Linehan on drugs, provided analytic psychotherapy, gave her shock treatments. None of these approaches worked. Seemed to touch the underlying sense of despair, the pervading sense of badness, the spells of rage and emptiness, or the self-destructive urges from which she suffered. She felt truly possessed and in a private hell from which there was no escape. Only her passionate caring for other people seemed to match her loneliness. "I was in hell," she said, "and I made a vow. If I ever get out, I'm going to come back and get others out of here." Not unlike the vow that little Jennifer made. "If you let me live, God, I will work to prevent children from feeling this pain that I feel." After her discharge, Lenihan was a desperate 23-year-old who barely survived outside the hospital. Further suicide episodes followed, then another hospitalization, and the old, familiar, crushing despair. Then one desperate night, Marsha Lenihan experienced her own private version of the harrowing of hell. Here's her description. "I was sitting in that sitting room right outside the chapel, which I will never forget because I was sitting on the couch and I think I felt complete and total despair is the only way I could say it. And so this nun walked by and she turned and looked and said, 'Is there anything I can do for you?' And I realized that no one could help me. No one. I said, 'No, thank you,' and she left. And so I got up and I went into the chapel and I was just kneeling there and I was just looking at the cross above the altar, and then out of the blue, out of the complete blue, suddenly everything became golden. And suddenly I felt something coming toward me. The crucifix started shimmering and the room was shimmering, and I had this unbelievable experience of God loving me. I jumped up and ran out and ran to my room, and I was standing in my room and I said out loud, 'I love myself.' And the minute, the very minute, the word 'myself' came out of my mouth, I knew that I had been completely transformed. Because up until that point, I would have never said that. I would have said, 'I love you,' because I had no sense of myself. I thought of myself as you. The minute the word came out of my mouth, I knew, and I have always known, that I would never cross that line again to being crazy." Quite a story. Now, this transformation, the reporter says, lasted the better part over a year until the end of a romantic relationship, whereupon the devastating feelings returned, but now Marsha Lenihan could somehow weather the storms of self-destructiveness. "What had changed?" asked the reporter, and then answered his own question. "It took years of study in psychology. She earned a PhD at Loyola in 71. On the surface, it seemed obvious she had accepted herself as she was. She had tried to kill herself so many times because the gulf between the person she wanted to be and the person she was left her desperate, hopeless, homesick for a life she would never know. The basic idea, radical acceptance, she now calls it, became an important part of the CBT program of therapy." DBT. That she has promulgated. "It incorporates elements of various behavioral techniques and especially her own discoveries of what worked in her case. For example, by intimately tracking the inner emotions that lead to the negative thoughts and hence to destructive action, and by doing this mindfully, with the help of Zen meditation, Lenihan was able to interrupt the otherwise cascading sequence of negativity and self-destruction controlled by dis. Intimately tracking the inner emotions that lead to the negative thoughts." So you notice that in the Gangaji tape, she says, "Slow it down, slow it down. I want to understand how you dissociate." And she says, "You have to teach me now. Slow it down." She said, "Because it's automatic for you. Slow it down. Tell me exactly the sequence. You have this feeling, and then what happens? And you have that feeling, and then what? And that thought comes? Okay, then what?" And so as you slow it down and open it up and untangle the tangled web, you realize that the cascading effects of the thoughts and the story are what give the the God who transforms suffering into violence such a big foothold. So the defense finally takes over. Okay, now. Further into hell, as they get through limbo and start down into these other funnel levels, they get into more and more torture. And there's the circle of the incontinent, the lustful, the gluttonous, the angry, and various forms of torment. People writhe in dark, slimy waters of the river Styx. They're beaten by monstrous beasts. And after the fourth and fifth circle, the pilgrim and his guide finally cross the river Styx and arrive, guess where, at the gates of Dis. Okay? Level six. Now, the tower gate is guarded by the fallen angels who have accompanied Lucifer in his fall from heaven. And here we see a few of them up there. Virgil tries to bargain with them, but they slam the gate in his face, and the two poets are barred from going any further. They have to wait for divine assistance. Then the Furies appear and threaten to unloose Medusa on the two poets, whereupon Virgil covers Dante's eyes so he cannot be turned to stone. Here's a 14th century manuscript that shows that, Virgil covering his eyes. Now here again, we see Dante and Virgil on the left, and the demons on the right, and the gates of Dis, and the great angel that doesn't look so great here, sort of puny, actually, but it's a great angel that comes. Here again, we see the angel at the gate of Dis. Now you see the demons inside. The gates of Dis are understood to be red hot. So here we see that depicted. Here's the Medusa. Here's a better rendition of the great angel. This is Blake. Again, what could possibly compare to Blake? Now, an angel is necessary to open the gates of Dis. That's interesting. Because yesterday I told you a story where an angel was responsible for closing the gates of Dis. Remember the story? A little girl took the message to her father and the angel wouldn't let her go in. So there's always an angel at the gates of dissociation. That's fascinating. What a fascinating story. So which angel is it that opens the gates of Dis? This one? Another example from the story we saw. Or this one? Because that's what's inside the gate. Right? Anybody got any answers? Which angel is it? I've given you the clues to this. Come on, you guys. Exactly. They're two sides of the same angel. Thank you. Remember? This is the fallen angel, the light and the dark angel. They're both two sides of the same thing. What does that mean to us? It means that, to me, it means that through the crack in dissociation, we see both the light and the dark. Okay, we'll see the light angel. That was the little girl, Jessica. We also see the dark angel. And once we fall into the archetypal world, we're into a world of spiritual powers. I don't know if any of you have ever read Walter Wink, The Powers. Anybody know his work? Gosh, he's such an important writer. Pardon? Was he a Quaker? Oh, great. Walter Wink, or he might have been a Mennonite, whatever. Okay, we wouldn't want to argue about his bona fides. The important thing is that he he became aware that every institution has its angel. And it's a very arresting and interesting. He talked about the powers, taming the powers. And he goes back to St. Paul. But the basic idea is that there are, we would say, archetypal powers in the unconscious that personify and that actually come to be a part of our lives sometimes. They can be powers for good or evil, but they are, you know, Jung was fond of saying the gods have become diseases. We now call them by different names, but these powers are really amazing, and through the crack and trauma, we get a glimpse of those powers, both light and dark. Reminds me, one of the common names for these powers is demonic entities. And maybe you've heard those terms. I used that in my first book a lot, talked about demonic defenses. And the word gets a wonderful explication in one of Plato's dialogues. I think it's a Symposium where Socrates is talking to Diotima about Eros, the mighty daimon. And Socrates asks Diotima, what are daimons? Why are they necessary? And Diotima explains to him, well, you know, Socrates, the gods cannot have direct intercourse with humans. And Socrates says, well, yes, that's of course true. Look what happened to poor Semele when Zeus had intercourse with her. And Diotima says, yes, that's exactly right. So, because the gods cannot have direct intercourse with humans or converse with humans, an intermediate realm of beings had to be created. And we call these intermediate beings daimons. They fly upward with our prayers to Olympus, and they fly downward into Hades, and they deliver the messages very much like Hermes Mercurius. Many of you know that Hermes Mercurius is the patron saint of depth psychology, precisely because he goes both ways. He's a daimonic figure. He goes up with his wing sandals, and he also couldn't go down and bargain in the underworld with Lucifer,